Tuesday morning here in Corn Sweatville, USA. That's apparently the reason why it is very humid outside. Today, we'll check in with the guys at training camp coming up around 9 o'clock this morning. Cody and Gold are up there. They'll be doing their show live at training camp as much as they possibly can because the football season is officially here as everybody is, you know, taking part in what's going on in the NFL. Everybody's back in action. I was just watching the Cleveland Browns. They're at training camp today. Oh, God, who cares? Like the Cleveland Browns, they... Let me tell you something, man. Let me tell you about those Cleveland Brownies. Yeah, you got an uphill battle in just your own division to go out there and try to win some games, right? Oh, I mean, man, they can't be the favorite.
No. They're probably the least favorite of all least favorites in the league.
Yeah, so we'll get into some NFL stuff coming up in a minute. But the Royals pulled one out last night, and I thought the most significant part of the game for me was the fact that they announced that a 45-year-old is pitching today. You know, it's unbelievable, right? Like Rich Hill pitching today for the Royals. That's impressive. I am thoroughly impressed that a 45-year-old is going out there today.
Pretty cool.
And is pitching in big league baseball. I don't know that we've ever seen somebody that old play in my lifetime anyway in professional sports. It wasn't a kicker or somebody like that, but 45 years old, this dude's going to go out there and give the Royals an opportunity to try to take two in a row from the Cubs. And if they take two in a row from the Cubs, now they've won three in a row. And all of a sudden, they've got themselves a winning streak, right? And that's what you have to have. You've got to start putting these games together. You've got to start finding ways to win games. I mean, you look at what Milwaukee's done, Mac. They've won 11 in a row, right? And that's what the Royals need to do. If they really want to be considered a postseason team and an organization that has the opportunity to go out there and play in October, you can't win two, lose one, win one, lose two, anything like that. You've got to start having sweeps. And you really needed to have that sweep against the Marlins, yep. I thought. You know, down in Florida, I said that coming out of the break. You had to have that sweep against the Marlins. You didn't do that. You lost the first two, and you put yourself in a really, really bad, tight situation. And now you've got the opportunity to win another one tonight against the Cubs. And I just thought seeing Rich Hill pitch was very, very significant to see a 45-year-old doing that. I think it's kind of cool. His 14th Major League Baseball team, which is wild in and of itself. I think that's nuts. I don't know what's crazier, the fact that he's pitching for his 14th team, which is basically half the league, or the fact that he's 45 years old. It's nuts. It's really, really impressive. That's the only word that I can use to describe Rich Hill. The other thing that I thought was very significant last night, Salvador Perez hit two home runs in that game. And that's the one thing that I'm now looking for
Smash.
For the rest of the season, Mac. I don't know, like, kind of what's keeping you focused and dialed in. But for me, it's Salvador Perez right now. And I want to see him get to 300 home runs this season. As we talked about yesterday, he's got that team option. They need to pick that thing up right now and make sure he's back next year in Kansas City, part of this ball club. I know people have been down on Salvador Perez. There hasn't been a baseball player in the month of July that's been hotter than Salvador Perez. I think he's hitting .367 this month. Jeez. And so he is really dialed in right now. And not only is he 10 home runs shy of 300, but he's also 27 home runs shy of breaking the all-time Royals record set by, of course, George Brett. The Hall of Famer has 317 home runs. And I'm sure if you ask George, you go, yes, Salvy, go ahead and break that record. I don't think Salvy breaks that record this year, obviously. But if he finishes this year strong and gets to that 300 mark, then next year, if they pick up the option, which they should, and I think it's very important for the morale of everybody to pick up Salvador Perez's option, then we're talking about him next year challenging George Brett as the all-time home run king for the Kansas City Royals. And that's something that's really cool because Salvy's awesome. Going into the Hall of Fame. He'll be the next Royal, if you will, full-time Royal, to go into Cooperstown.
Yeah, I hope that just becomes kind of a known that he's going to go into the Hall of Fame. I know that's such a hot-button topic with Salvador Perez, but man, just a couple more years and that's going to be solidified.
Do people think he's not a Hall of Famer?
Oh, that's a pretty big hot button topic. Yeah,
for who?
For MLB fans. I mean, I see it whenever he's brought up. I mean, that's pretty much that. Well, is he Hall of Famer? I don't know.
He's a World Series MVP.
Yeah, I think it's a no brainer.
I do too. Like, what am I missing? He's 10 home runs shy of 300, guys. I mean,
You just said 27 from leading the whole franchise.
Yeah,
it's an old franchise,
right? Like Salvador Perez is a lock for the Hall of Fame.
I think
and,
so too.
And he's a few RBI short of 1,000 yeah. too. So you get 300 and 1,000 as a catcher
and World Series MVP.
And World Series MVP.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's. I mean, I don't know nearly as much as you about baseball, but I'd say he's probably a top 10 catcher of all time.
I don't think it's hard to argue that, really. You know, I'd have to really think
about
it.
Yeah, you have to sit down and think.
And you're putting me on the spot. I know there's the Yogi Berras back in the day and Carlton Fisks and, you know, Johnny Bench and all these guys that, you know, you look at the home run list. I think there's only 10 guys in the history of this game from the catching position that have 300 home runs.
Wow.
And I think all but one are in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, I forget who the one that isn't in the Hall of Fame, and I don't know why that person isn't. But, you know, I think Salvador Perez, he gets 300. I think that puts him as a lock for the Hall of Fame. He's one of the game's great ambassadors. Everybody loves Salvi, too.
Yeah, as a human, yep.
And that's part of, you know, the getting into the Hall of Fame, right? You got to be liked. These writers will hold the vendetta against you.
Dude.
I mean, somebody didn't vote for George Brett, okay? Somebody didn't vote for Derek Jeter. Somebody didn't vote for Nolan Ryan. Somebody didn't vote for Robin Yount, you know? So there are people out there who have these vendettas. I don't know that there's anybody out there in the voting public, you know, for the Hall of Fame that can say Salvador Perez isn't a guy that they love. I mean, everybody loves Salvi.
Literally everyone.
And he's been so good for Major League Baseball because he brought fun to the ballpark. What he did with Lorenzo Cain is one of the best things ever to get Lorenzo Cain out of his shell. Maybe he should do that with Bobby too, you know, get Bobby out of his shell a little bit and make him more of an exciting player from a, you know, a fun standpoint as opposed to just a baseball standpoint, because that's what guys want now. Fans want that fun aspect of the players. I'd love to see Salvador Perez take Bobby Witt Jr. under his wing and kind of do what he did to Lorenzo Cain to get him to come out of his shell. But Salvador Perez is a World Series MVP. He's on, you know, par to hit 300 home runs and drive in 1,000 runs. He's been through two different cycles of postseason games, season, you know, things here in Kansas City with the World Series in 14 and 15, and then getting back to the postseason last year. I mean, the guy's been all over the place. I mean, he's loved by everybody in Major League Baseball. There should be no debate on whether or not Salvador Perez is a Hall of Famer. And that's why I think if you get to that 300 home run level and even past George Brett as the all-time home run leader for the Royals, you're putting up all these walls and saying, yeah, he's a lock for the Hall of Fame.
There's no question. Yeah, this is from the 913, and I was forgetting the main counter argument, but this is it. People say if Posada isn't in, he can't be.
Is Posada good because he played for the Yankees?
Yeah.
I'm asking. I don't know what Posada's numbers are. I don't. I really don't. I've never really looked at Jorge Posada's numbers, but if, you know, if Salvi is better than him in home runs and RBIs and all this kind of stuff, yeah, Posada played for the Yankees and had the New York thing, but just because you played for the Yankees in that era doesn't make you a Hall of Famer. I don't know that Posada was ever a World Series MVP. I know Salvador Perez was, and Salvador Perez won a World Series with the Kansas City Royals in an era where the small market, small revenue team doesn't normally win the world championship in baseball. I mean, go back and look before the Royals won it. There was no small market team winning the world championship, right? And since they won the world championship, I don't believe a team below market 10 has won the World Series. And so what the Royals are doing and what they have done over Salvador Perez's career has been nothing short of impressive. And so I think right now, 100%, Salvador Perez is in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, maybe I'm misreading it. Maybe I'm looking at it wrong. Maybe I'm biased a little bit, but I don't see how Salvador Perez, if he gets to 300 home runs, is a guy that probably is on the outside of Cooperstown looking in. I've talked to a lot of people in baseball about Salvador Perez, and people that I trust in the game are already saying, we're going to Cooperstown when Salvi gets put in. And so, I mean, I guess that's kind of where I think right now that Salvador Perez is 100% a Hall of Famer for the Kansas City Royals. Are you looking at the Posada stats?
Yeah, I was just kind of looking and comparing. I mean, 275 home runs for Posada, 290 obviously for Salvi, which will keep going. He's probably, I think it's 1,065 RBIs, and Salvi's at like 975. He could pass that too.
What is Posada at?
It's like 1,065, so it's like less than 100 Salvi's behind him in RBIs, so he could pass him there as well. Better batting average, but I don't know how much that really matters. Five-time Silver Slugger for Posada, 5 Gold Glove winner for Salvador Perez. No World Series MVP for Posada. I don't know. I mean, Perez looks better.
Yeah. I mean, you're making the case, I think, anyway, for Salvador Perez. And Jorge Posada was one of the great players of his generation, But so is Salvador Perez. He's one of the great players of his generation. I can't believe we would have that conversation. I guess I'm perplexed by that because I thought for sure he'd be a lock for the Hall of Fame once he gets to 300 home runs. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, somebody in the NFL has said one of the greatest things ever. They're tired of being close. We'll tell you who that is next.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at TheFan965 for behind-the-scenes content from the show. Kansas City's FM sports station. 96.5 The Fan.
Jay Binkley wasn't hanging out in the studio. As we see Jay, I guess he's getting ready for training camp. He wants to hear everything that's going on in St. Joe. That'll be coming your way around 9 o'clock. We'll check in with Alex and Cody, who are up in training camp. At 9:30, we will be joined by Tammy Reed, the wife of Andy Reed. She's got a cool thing going on down in Westport for the Westport Historical Society. They are trying to raise money to support a needed renovation at the historic 1855 Harris Carney House in Westport. And Andy and her are all about rehabbing this. They want to raise like $500,000 to do so. And they've got some cool ways that we can help them raise money. How about that? I mean, the whole thing with Andy Reid, can we play that again? Can we play that again with Andy Reid? The ESPN trailer that came out yesterday. Can we play that? You got the bean footage back there?
Every year, that's the only goal that you have is winning the Super Bowl. If we don't win it, it's a failure.
As much of a dreamer as Lamar was, I don't think he could have ever imagined this.
Superstar athletes, leading men, they're on the top of the mountain.
The Cowboys are America's team. Why don't we be the world's team?
Chiefs Kingdom!
All this pressure builds up.
No one's ever got three.
When you're winning, people look at you and they're like, you're the villain.
Cut the camera quickly.
It's our life. And it's an emotional game.
Greatness all day! Let's repeat! Let's make history!
A lot of ups and downs, a lot of things to fight through.
Win or lose, this team will never be the same.
How about those Chiefs?
Let's go.
Yeah, really good. Like that's the trailer for that. And you hear Andy Reid get emotional in that, right?
Yeah.
That's the first time that I've seen Andy kind of get emotional around the football side of things. He's always been, you know, very dialed into whatever was next. And, you know, we've asked him over the years about, you know, going and reflecting about, you know, everything that he's been able to accomplish. And he's always been one of those guys, we'll worry about that later. We'll worry about that later. Got other things to focus on. And there you heard a little bit of emotion from Andy Reid when he was kind of talking about, you know, this situation that he's got going on here in Kansas City. And I think it's really cool because that's the moment where we realized, yeah, Andy Reid is ours. He is no longer a Philadelphia Eagle, anything. He is ours. And he understands that, you know, when his legacy is written, it's all going to be about what's written here in Kansas City. And so you hear him get emotional there. And then Tammy's going to talk in about an hour about him and her together trying to raise $500,000 to rehab an old house in Westport that needs the rehabbing because it's such an important part of our history here in Kansas City. Like, Andy Reid's like, yeah, I'll do that. I love Kansas City. And so, like that's our guy, man. Like, there's nobody, in my opinion, right now that embodies Kansas City more than Andy Reid. He is one of us. We are one of him. We're all in this thing together. And I think with that video, that trailer that ESPN put out for the August, I think, 14th airing.
Yep, first episode.
And it's going to be on ESPN. It's going to be on ESPN Plus, Disney Plus, all the pluses that they have and whatnot. You'll be able to find it just about anywhere you look.
Plus,
to
we'll
watch
be talking
it.
About it,
yeah,
too.
And obviously, we'll be talking about it. But I'm excited for that.
Me too, man.
I got goosebumps yesterday, awesome. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be really, really cool. And I don't get excited for that kind of stuff because I'm just not a show watcher, as we've talked about. Yeah. Like, it's just it's like pulling teeth for me to watch anything, right? And but this one, I'm ready today. You know,
yeah,
give me the sneak peeks. I'm ready for it all, and I can't wait to watch this this trilogy. Not trilogy, I guess it's four or five of them. Trilogy would be the wrong term to use, but to watch this documentary about the Kansas City Chiefs and just to hear, you know, Andy get emotional like that, I really love that. And so I think that's really cool. And then to see that he's just giving back to the community, like he's just one of us, because that's what we do in Kansas City. We help each other out. And so maybe we'll get that $500,000 raised today for Andy and Tammy Reed. David Montgomery, who plays for a team called the Lions, is calling this the year of reckoning for the Detroit Lions. And basically he said, I'm tired of being close, man, right? I'm tired of being close.
Yeah.
It's time to break through. I don't disagree with him at all. It's time for the Lions to take it to the next step. I don't know that there's going to be a team, in my opinion anyway. This is Bob's opinion, not yours or whoever. I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to the Lions because losing both of your coordinators is a big deal at the same time.
Yep.
At the exact same time, losing your offensive guy and your defensive guy to head coaches around this league, it's going to be very interesting to see how they backfill on that and to see what Dan Campbell's really about as a head coach. So I think they're a very intriguing team this year, but also one where it's, you know, poop or get off the pot time now if you're the Lions.
Well, and it's also cool because one of those coordinators, Ben Johnson, is going to play the Lions twice this year and for the remaining time that he's there. So that's another cool thing. It's like Ben Johnson knows what they're trying to do over there. When the Lions and Bears play, there may be a little extra umph added to that already rivalry matchup. So, yeah, it's crazy to say that the Lions' windows already may be closing, but that's how quick the NFL goes, man. They weren't in the playoffs. They were below 500. I believe it was three seasons ago. In these last 2 years, they've really exploded and kind of become this high-octane offense and really fun on the defensive side when they don't lose every starter like they did last year. But I think he's right. I mean, the NFC is at a weaker time. Jared Goff's 30, going to be 31, so you've got a few more years left with him. You don't know what Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be in a couple years. He's a running back. David Montgomery, same thing. He's even older. That offensive line, you've lost two offensive linemen in Kevin Zeiler and Frank Ragnow this season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're right, man. It's time to poop or get off the pot because people aren't going to wait around, and you've got young quarterbacks coming into this league every year. Jaden Daniels, you know, in two or three years, he's going to be a lot better than he already is right now. You know, you've got Caleb Williams, who I believe is one of the guys who's the future of the NFL. I truthfully believe that. Yeah, you can laugh at me text line all you want, and you do, Bob, but I do. And even if it's not Caleb Williams, you know, maybe it's Bryce Young. Name your NFC quarterback. They're going to be taking their throne soon as well. So if you're the Lions, you've got to do it now.
I don't know if this is true from the text line, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. The Lions lost eight coaches since last year.
Yes.
Holy crap.
Yep.
I mean, all right, pause the music for a second. I want to give a story. That's big.
It's huge.
It's huge, and here's why it's huge. Years ago, back when I was in a minimum security prison called St. Louis, I was covering the Rams, and my friend Al Saunders was the offensive coordinator of the Rams. He'd served time here in Kansas City as the offensive coordinator, then went over to St. Louis about the same time I did, and so we reconnected over there, and I would sit down in his office, and he would teach me the offense, right? And you sit there and you listen to it and you're like, I have no idea what any of this means, right? And I'm smiling, okay.
I mean,
you want to talk about a language that I had no idea what was going on. It was English, but I had no idea what, you know, 80 fly. I'm like, I have no idea what all this is. And Al tried to break it down. Okay, this means this. This part of the play means that. This part of the play means that. And that's when I realized, if you're a quarterback in the NFL, you got to be smart. You can't be an idiot to be a quarterback in the NFL. If you're an idiot, you're not going to have success in this league at that quarterback position because you have to know the plays. You have to regurgitate the plays. You have to know what everybody's doing on every single play. It's not a wide receiver or a lineman or a running back where you have to know what you're doing and you don't really care what anybody else is doing. Quarterback has to know what they're doing on every single play, every person on every play, right? It's very difficult to play quarterback in the NFL. But the one thing that really stuck out to me in this conversation that I had with Al 20 years ago or whatever it was now is he goes, every offensive coordinator speaks their own language. And so when you bring in and you fire or get rid of or somebody gets promoted to a head coach as an offensive coordinator, the next guy you bring in is speaking a completely different language from the guy that just went out the door. And Al said it to me this way. He goes, think about it like this. You speak Spanish. and you're picked up and placed in the middle of France, and everybody around you speaks French, and you have to figure out a way, only knowing Spanish, to communicate and get the hell out of the middle of nowhere. Damn. And I'm like, that's why Al was brilliant. Brilliant offensive mind. He could dumb it down for me. And once he kind of used that analogy for me, of you're learning a different language. You speak French, I speak Spanish, Japanese, Latin, Italian, German. Think about a quarterback who's constantly having changeover with his coaches. He's got to learn the language that that coach is speaking and then get up to the level where he acts on that language like it's natural. And so for the last couple of years, say Ben Johnson's been speaking French and Jared Goff has got this down. He knows exactly what's going to happen. Boom, 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 boom. Ben Johnson, eight coaches leave. New coach comes in. Now he's speaking Spanish. So now does Jared Goff understand the language that's being spoken to him? And does he understand the language enough to communicate to everybody else and to act in real time? And I'm like, wow. When you put it like that's that, insane. It shows you how hard it is to have success. So we, with that, that's a great text, man. I think it was awesome that he said that those eight coaches, because that to me says, wow, there may be a little bit of an early learning curve with the Lions because of all the new languages that these guys are learning, both offensively and defensively as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great analogy. The language thing really puts it into perspective.
Yeah.
And I think if you've watched a couple episodes of The Quarterback, you can see how important Ben Johnson is to that offense. And I'm sure the guys behind him are as well. And some of those are those eight guys who had left behind Ben Johnson. Well, there's Jared Goff multiple times in The Quarterback mentions, well, yeah, I went to our meeting at the beginning of the week and just kind of talked to Ben Johnson about what he's seeing, about what he wants. He was the driver of that offense, telling Jared Goff what to do. All that pretty cool stuff, the eye candy, the trick plays, the fake trips, the fake fumbles, linemen catching touchdowns and throwing touchdowns. Like, that's Ben Johnson. So, like, I don't know who else is going to be driving that bus now, and Dan Campbell's got to be able to take it over, and he's a defensive mind. And Goff isn't what I consider a win because of, or a guy who lifts everyone else up. He's got to have a win with, and got to have a guy kind of doing a lot of that behind-the-scenes work for him so he's able to go and throw to his weapons. So, yeah, I think the Lions, man, they're one of the big stories in the NFC and in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. From the 816, everything Bob just said proves just how underrated Alex Smith was. Mm-hmm. How many coordinators did he have to adjust to before Andy in Kansas City? It's true. That's why I always say 50% of the quarterbacks that fail in the NFL are failed by the organizations. Yes, it's up to the player to find a way to go out there and overcome some of this stuff, but if you're constantly changing offensive coordinators and the offensive language that you use, then you're never going to put your player in position to be successful. You can't constantly change the messaging and the language and the system and the scheme and expect these guys to have success. It just doesn't work that way. Look at the most successful offense over the last 15 years, consistent with Andy Reid.
Yep.
It's the same language every year. Patrick Mahomes, when the season ends, and then the season begins in March, a month after it usually ends for the Chiefs, he's not going in there and starting from square one. He's going in there now. He's going, okay, let's build on what we did last year. Let's build on what we've done for the last 5 years. I'm an expert at this language. I know this language backwards and forward. How can I get even better? Get that Rosetta Stone out, right? Mm-hmm. Learn more words and continue to build on that. And so why Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are growing together, how many teams and quarterbacks, dude, around this league are going, I got a new offensive coordinator again. I got a new head coach again. I got a new play caller again. I mean, Caleb Williams is a prime example of that. What's this, his third offensive coordinator in 3 years or something like that? No wonder he stinks. He hasn't been he hasn't been given the proper tools to have the success. And so now this year with Ben Johnson as another new voice from where he was a year ago, if he goes out and starts slow, which I think he probably will, that's just, you know, the odds with the new offensive coordinator, everybody's going to say he's no good. But the Bears have now told this guy, you need to be fluent in three languages in 3 years and better than fluent in it because you need to communicate to everybody else. How's that a fair shake for Caleb Williams?
Yeah, and I mean, Baker Mayfield, it was always kind of the talk about him. The defenders of Baker Mayfield were, he's had a different offensive coordinator every year, and now you put him around a couple good situations. Still with changing OCs, Baker's been able to go through that. But yeah, you're right. He's probably fluent in six or seven languages by now. He's had so much where he can kind of go, okay, he's more malleable. He's able to go kind of learn some stuff. So this is a good text as well. Using this language example, why would you not make the new OC learn to speak that player's language, one coach versus a whole offense? I think there's part of that. I think you mentioned Andy Reid. That's kind of what makes Andy Reid so good, because he says, okay, this is the language you speak. Okay, it's not exactly the language we're going to speak, but I'm going to take a couple things that you understand from your language into mine. We'll incorporate it and kind of create one thing, because I know what you're good at and I know what I'm good at. And I know if we work together, we're going to be great at these things together.
Well, and to take that one step further too, Andy did that. You know, Andy was the first guy in the NFL who said, all right, we're done putting these quarterbacks under center. They played 4 years in college without going under center. Yeah. Why am I all of a sudden going to make them go under center? I'm going to adjust and adapt to them and shrink that learning curve, make that learning curve smaller, you know, instead of saying, okay, Chase Daniel, let's use that as an example. You just played 4 years at Mizzou. You were great in the pistol formation. Welcome to the NFL. Get your hands under that guy's butt.
Yeah,
I haven't done that in 4 years. Yeah. Why, like, so you shrink the learning curve. And Andy was brilliant at doing that. Became one of the first coaches to say, let me adapt, you know, to the players that are coming in. Now, it's still his offense and his language and all that kind of stuff, and you're going to have to adjust to that. But it's not to say that Andy hasn't been malleable either. I mean, I think Andy definitely has been.
100%.
For a guy who's, you know, 65 years old to kind of adjust like that shows you that anybody can be malleable and anybody can adjust and all of that. So back to where we were with the Lions, a big year for them. A year of reckoning, as David Montgomery said. Who else do you have on your list of years of reckoning for the NFL this year? Who needs to really knock this thing out of the park?
I mean, I think this is the 49ers last year, and I think some would say it's already past them, right? The 49ers window, some would say, is already shut. I'm giving them one more season because maybe McCaffrey has a renaissance for one more year. Kittle can still go out and do it. Almost had 1,200 yards last season. I believe in Brandon Ayuk. Like, there are the pieces. Juwan Jennings, good. We saw Ricky Pearsall have a productive season last year. We know what the defense...
After getting shot?
Yes, after getting shot, literally getting shot in the chest or somewhere in the abdomen, torso area, was able to come back and have a decently productive rookie season with all the other distractions that were going on in San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan has been to the NFC Championship multiple times, the Super Bowl twice, and lost with just San Francisco. Like, he's not long for that world either. If they can't get over the hump, their players are aging. Yeah, Trent Williams is 40. Like, this is it. Like, this is kind of their time. I put the Rams up there too.
Why the Rams?
Stafford's 38.
Okay, because of that. Okay.
Yeah, Stafford's 38. I mean, if you look at they got Davante Adams. He's their second wide receiver. I mean, he's in his young 30s. He's not long for this NFL world. Besides that, you've got Puka Nacua and running back whose name's slipping my mind right now, Kyron Williams. And we know what Kyron Williams is. He's a great running back, but for how long? How long does that last? That's 2 or 3 years left.
Max.
Max, exactly. So, yeah, I'd say the Rams, it's this year, now or never. I put Baltimore Ravens up there, and this is kind of a hotter take, but Derrick Henry, 31, 32 years old. Don't know how much you have him. He's a massive part of that offense, part of the reason they were so explosive last year. Another great year for this defense, but Kyle Hamilton and Odofe Owe, all those guys, another year older. We don't know how long they're going to be able to keep that defensive unit intact. It will be one of the better defenses in the NFL, so I don't know how long they're going to be able to keep them all on the same roster, pay those guys. And Lamar Jackson, 28, 29 years old, right around there. He can throw the ball. Mm-hmm. Prolific passer. He's proved that over the last two seasons.
Yeah, I'm tired of people saying he can't throw the football.
He can throw the football. He led the league in passing yards like two seasons ago. Yeah. He was like sixth this year. He can throw the football. He's a great passer. But his best weapon is his legs at the end of the day. What makes him separate, what kind of defies him from everyone else, is his ability to run on the ground. When's that going to go, Bob?
Yeah.
2 years? 3 years? I don't know.
Quick. Sooner rather than later. You know what'll happen, Mac? And this is the way it always goes. You just won't see it coming. It'll just happen. You'll show up on September 8th or whatever their first game is. Where the hell did his legs go? Oh, he hit that.
It's the cliff, man.
It is. It happens so fast. And that's why running backs have such a short shelf life in the NFL. A couple of teams that I have that I think it's time to kind of kick the door in for. I've got the Bengals on this list. We're at a spot now where every year people say the Bengals, and they never do anything. They always start out slow. They have infighting. Now you've got the owner out there who doesn't trust his players because he doesn't want to give the guy a guaranteed contract in case he ends up in jail and, you know, gets into a dispute with a female, like some dumb stuff that's being said in Cincinnati right now. So the Bengals are on my list. The Bills are on my list. I think this is a very big year for the Buffalo Bills. How many times can you get this close and continue to run it back, especially with Nick Saban being out there, right? And you're going into a new stadium. If the Bills don't make it to the Super Bowl this year, I mean, you eventually have to look at the head coach. They're not losing for games sure. in the postseason because of Josh Allen, really.
No, we don't right? look at those games and go, damn, Allen really could have done more. That's not what we look at.
No, we really don't. It's the defense. They didn't play. And you know, but
McDermott's
now look,
defense.
In that game where we played them up in Buffalo, Allen had an opportunity and put him in the dirt at the end of the game. You know, he didn't win the game when he had the opportunity to do so. But Sean McDermott is kind of becoming that gray cloud over that organization.
Yeah,
and,
you're right.
And eventually you need to make a change, you know, with that kind of the Marty Schottenheimer effect. Really, 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 really good, but couldn't get you over that hump. And eventually you have to make that change to give you, hopefully, if you're Buffalo, the guy that can get you over that hump. Who that is, hell if I know. I've got the Texans on my list as well.
I like that.
I think it's a big year for the Houston Texans as well. And I'm going to throw this one in there, and you're going to laugh at me.
Okay.
Philadelphia. I want to know how they handle success.
Wow.
I want to know how they handle success. Are they going to be like the Chiefs and handle success businesslike? Or are they going to act like they've arrived and they're just going to throw their helmets out there and
we've already won. We're the bee's knees. We're so talented. Look at us kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's another one.
Interesting.
That
I like that angle
on that list. I was reading something yesterday. One of the Rams defensive linemen was saying about Philadelphia. They're like, the Eagles are talking all the smack like they've already won the conference again. Hey, I got something to say about that, right? It's you know, we're going to meet up again in the playoffs and we're going to settle the score type of thing. And so I read that. I'm like, is Philadelphia acting like nothing matters this year? Like, you see sometimes teams win championships, they go 6-10 the next year. You're like, how did that happen? Well, because they just won the championship. They're fat and happy, and, you know, and how does Nick Sirianni handle success, right?
100%.
Can he hold these guys accountable and be that guy that you need to take you to that next level now? You've won. Everybody's gunning for you right now. How are they going to handle being the hunted in this situation? And Saquon Barkley, you look at his numbers, good year, bad year. Good year, yep. Bad year. Good year, bad year. So based on that, looks like he potentially may have a bad year for the Philadelphia Eagles. So that's very curious to see how they're going to handle the success of being Super Bowl champions.
I am too. I mean, when we saw what happened when they made the Super Bowl and lost, they like lost 7 out of the last 8 games. They weren't able to keep it up. And you mentioned Saquon Barkley. Every quarterback besides, I believe, Derrick Henry, and I think that's it, who has had this many touches one year, got hurt the next year. Either got hurt or didn't play the whole season, which is getting hurt. So I hope that doesn't happen for Saquon. I never wish injuries upon anyone, but you're right. If you're going to go off historical and statistical evidence, yeah, I don't think Saquon's playing 17 games this year, and certainly not at the level that he did last year. And to your Texans take, I love that, because not only is it time for them to kind of get going, hey, this AFC South isn't going to be some crummy division forever. You know, Cam Ward could be great. And who knows what the Colts could do? Like, those teams are going to get better. So Texans, you're winning 10 games and just kind of cruising to a division title every year. That's going to stop soon.
Cam Ward should be like thanking his lucky stars every single day, because now he's the starter.
Yes.
Will Levis is out.
Love it.
He dropped a thing of mayo on his knee or something like that. He won't be able to participate or whatever the hell he's got going on. How about that? I mean, screw you, pal. You've known you needed the surgery, and you're waiting in training camp. You suck.
Yeah, that sucks,
like, that guy,
dude.
That guy's a piece, man.
Seriously, he is, man. I remember when I played that audio of him at that Peyton Manning conference, and his one question was like, hey, man, so, like, how do you get, like, endorsements? You got Peyton Manning in front of you, and you're talking about, and you haven't played a damn snap.
He was asking Peyton how to get endorsements?
Yeah, hey, man, so, like, when you're dealing with, like, you know, endorsements and money, and Peyton's like, yeah, man, I kind of let my agent deal with that. You know, kind of was just like, what? Like, what are we talking about, dude?
Right. Wow. That
tells you all you need to
know.
That's
all you need to know, right?
You need to know.
And so he's not a team player. He's not a guy that you want part of your team rowing the boat in that same direction. So not only does Cam Ward thank his lucky stars about that, but he also thanks his lucky stars because nobody's paying attention to him right now. And he can actually go down there and be a quarterback in his first year and make mistakes, and it's going to be okay.
Yeah. I agree.
And that's cool.
That is cool. I'm excited for them.
Yeah, I'm excited for him to have that opportunity. So somebody from the text line says, what's your guys' take on the Buccaneers? You like them this year, don't you?
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about the Buccaneers. I think it's between them and the Falcons. The Worf's injury worries me a little bit. But, yeah, I'm kind of skeptical on the Baker Mayfield thing. Like, okay, how good really are you? Last year was incredible. Are you going to be able to do that again? I expect a little bit of regression. Yeah, I think the Buccaneers are good. Like, can you make that next step through that threshold to being like a really good to great team.
Right. And I think also, too, another good one from the text line from the 816, the Dolphins. That thing is going to go south real soon, right?
See ya.
I mean, does that guy last till October? Is he now the number one guy that's going to get fired?
I think it's got to be him and Daboll. I think those are the guys.
Do you think Daboll's still on that list with Jackson Dart throwing a dart and knocking that guy off the jet ski?
Personally, I think Daboll bought himself another year or two. And I think the same with the GM.
And it goes back to the conversation we were having when we started this segment. You got a rookie quarterback. You're going to bring him in this year.
Exactly.
Teach him this language that Brian Daboll's got going on, then fire Daboll at the end of the season, bring in a whole new regime. Jackson Dart's back to zero.
Yeah. For a guy who has been talked about from a prospect perspective as maybe need a little more help with the film and the learning of the complicated offenses. He's a guy who's kind of handed everything from Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. So, yeah, that would be extra difficult for him to deal with.
Yeah, no doubt. So that's kind of the look at what we see when it comes to some of these teams trying to find a way to break through that glass ceiling. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, he's going to go down as one of the best GMs in the history of sports. We'll tell you who next.
Hey, it's Michael Wacha, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Well, it's starting to get ugly in one NFL city. We'll tell you where that is coming up in about 10 minutes here on 96.5 The Fan. So we got that information that is flowing in right now, and it makes you just really happy, Mac. I don't know, to sit back and go, God, I'm glad we're not dealing with these issues here in Kansas City. So we'll get that to you coming up in a little bit here on 96.5 The Fan. We had a guy yesterday who I thought I liked, and obviously now I don't like, by the name of Harry Douglas, right? He spoke, I guess, 2 weeks ago and was very, you know, praising of the Kansas City Chiefs, and then spoke yesterday and I guess forgot what he said. Do you have that beautiful audio from Harry Douglas that we can play?
For the very first time since Patrick Mahomes has become the starter for the Kansas City Chiefs, they will not win the AFC West.
Oh.
I am going with the Denver Broncos because how fantastic they were on defense a season ago, but how they upgraded this season as well. Adding a linebacker in Dre Greenlaw, adding Hufanga at the safety position. Their first round pick was Jahdae Barron from Texas. But then when you look at the offensive side of the ball, I look at a guy in Bo Nix who had the ability to grasp a Sean Payton offense and run it to perfection in his rookie season. Well, the two glaring holes for Denver last season was the tight end position and the running back position. They drafted R.J. Harvey. They also acquired J.K. Dobbins. And they got Evan Engram at the tight end position. I'm looking for the Denver Broncos to win this division.
Evan Engram.
Evan Engram.
I mean, you shot milk out your nose when you heard him say Evan Engram. Evan Engram. That's like saying, I mean, that guy's past his prime. I mean, you're not gonna win because you went out and got. Didn't he quit on his team last year?
That's,
I mean,
that's Barber's number one tight end. That's Barbershop's guy. Evan Engram.
It is. But I mean, like 5 years ago,
exactly.
Like when he was with the Giants.
Yes.
You know, he's been with the Jags since then, and really didn't do a whole heck
okay.
of a lot last year.
Yeah, he was okay a couple seasons. Like, yeah, R.J. Harvey, J.K. Dobbins. These are the reasons that the Broncos are winning?
Well, you know I like Bo Nix, right? And
yeah,
I told you,
are you
right?
A Bo Nix guy?
Yeah. But he's not better than Patrick Mahomes on any level. And Sean Payton is not better than Andy Reid at any level. And it's funny to listen to Harry Douglas talk about that. And you got to say something on ESPN. I understand where he's going. They like pick somebody other than the Chiefs maybe to win the AFC West. But we're reverting back to defense now, which I find to be very funny in the NFL. Because this has been such an offensively driven league for the last 20 years. Now we're looking at a situation where, like, I like what they've done on defense. We all like what they do on defense. I don't think anybody's going to argue that, but I don't know that they have the quarterback, as much as I like Bo Nix, to say I'm ready to choose them to unseat Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, especially coming off a Super Bowl loss and having the momentum, not the momentum, but the drive, if you will, to get revenge on everybody. And you said Mahomes this morning tweeted out a picture of a clock ticking or something
that. The clock emoji.
Yeah.
So it's time.
It's time. Yeah.
It
absolutely is time. And that's why I've been saying that since February. Like when they lost that Super Bowl, it sucked and we hated every minute of that. But at the end of the day, you knew they were going to be back. You knew they were going to be ready to go because that's what they've done in the past. When they've lost in the postseason in the past, they've exacted revenge the following year. They've gotten back to the AFC Championship game. They've gotten back to the Super Bowl. They've won the Super Bowl. That's been the MO. They've got a track record there, a pattern there of doing all of this. And the reason why is because they've got a brilliant GM along with the head coach and quarterback and Brett Veach. And I do believe when it's all said and done, in my opinion, Brett Veach will go down as one of the best general managers in the history of American professional sports, not just in the NFL, but American professional sports. I think obviously Brian Cashman makes that list because of the way he's, you know, run the Yankees for 30 years. I think you could probably put Jerry Krause on that list for when sure. He was running the Chicago Bulls back in the day and how good he is. And what Brett Veach is doing right now, I mean, we're going to talk about the Bengals. We're going to talk about the Cowboys. We've talked about those two franchises already this morning. You just don't see the disputes. You don't see the animosity. You don't see players hating the organization. You get contracts done. You get guys ready to go. You draft quality players. You draft quality people. Yeah, Brett Veach, in my opinion, is going to go down as one of the best general managers in the history of American professional sports. And I don't think that's going out there and saying something wild and crazy. I think that's a fact.
Do you think... Are GMs in charge of hiring the next coach?
Well, it depends on who it is. Here, I don't think Andy's going anywhere.
Well, no, but let's just say in 8-10 years when that happens, if Veach is still here and he has now really kind of vaulted himself up into that sort of list, is he in charge? Because if he makes that choice, kind of where is where I'm going, if he makes that choice and it's a great choice, if it's even 75% as good of a choice as Andy Reid was,
right.
Then, I mean, he would be number one.
Yeah.
Because if the run sustains here in Kansas City for the next decade or so, not all Super Bowls, but you know what I mean, a top contender, winning games, doing this, Mahomes, GOAT or second GOAT of all of NFL history, and Veach then hires a coach that is able to sustain that success and keep the dynasty at least somewhat going, or at least keep this team relevant. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you'd have to put him up. I think you can already start to make that argument like you are, but if he's able to set this franchise up for another 10 years, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of who else, you know, would be on that list. I think like Harmon Policy, maybe back in the day in San Francisco when he put together those teams in the 80s and 90s with Montana and Young and all those guys and whatnot. They had Bill Walsh there, who was a great head coach as well. So a lot of the conversation was surrounding Bill Walsh and Joe Montana, as it should, the quarterback coach, you know, combination, then Bill Walsh and Steve Young and then George Seifert and Steve Young and whatnot. But I mean, when you think about great general managers in sports in the history of American professional sports, you know, there's not a lot to pop off the page that you get excited about that you're like, wow, this guy was great. You know, a lot of these guys, 3-4 year guys, and they're on to the next, they're switching teams and doing all that kind of stuff. Brett Veach has been entrenched here, you know, for the last decade, basically, you know, better part of the decade, and all they do is win championships. And how to have him on a list that doesn't say greatest of all time in American professional sports, you'd be doing it wrong, I think.
If you look at the list, it's not like, you're right, it's not like these guys are all amazing. There's a few like, whoa, okay, he's got to be up there. Oh, this guy, you mentioned those, but I mean, Red Auerbach would be a name that I'd put up there, but again, you're going way back. I think, you know, Sam Presti is current. I don't think he's on that list yet, but another guy who could, if he keeps this run.
They got to win a couple more championships.
Yes, they got to win more championships. They got to keep this going. The drafts have to stay quality, all those sorts of things, right? But he's put himself in the situation. I think one that we didn't mention would be Pat Riley.
What about Greg Popovich?
Popovich is a great one.
Yeah, Pat Riley's a good one, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think both those guys.
Yeah, I think both of those guys get credit. You know, and obviously Popovich, head coach and general manager. Yeah,
sure, dude.
Yeah, it's a hell of a run that he had down there in San Antonio. So the list is very small, and Brett Veach belongs on that list. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, as football season gets ready to start, I'm glad we aren't this town. We'll tell you who next.
Fesco and Dusty. Subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at The Fan 965, Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.